Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Posthumous Education by Drew Hayes, narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Preface. I almost certainly do not know you. However, I shall assume you are a lovely person, and it is my loss for not having yet had the opportunity to meet you. Still, I must assume you and I are connected in some way, for the works you are about to hear are selections from a journal of my memoirs. I compiled these not in the belief that the stories within are so compelling they must be told, but rather because I found my unexpected life transition to be so shockingly uneventful, at least initially. I place the blame for my aggrandized expectations squarely on contemporary media, filling my head with the belief that a ticket to the supernatural also put one on an express train toward coolness and suave charm. This is simply not the case, or at least it was not my case. I recorded my journeys in the hopes that, should another being find themselves utterly depressed at the humdrum personality still saddling their supernatural frame, they might find solace in knowing they are not the only one to have felt that way. Given the lengthy lifespan of many of the people with whom I associate, there is no guarantee they will have passed on by the time this is listened to. Therefore, names have been changed as I deemed necessary. So, dear listener, whom I suspect is a wonderful person, merely in need of a bit of reassurance, take comfort in my tales of uneventful blundering. One's nature is hard to change. Sometimes even death is insufficient to accomplish such a task. But be assured that, while you might find yourself still more human than anticipated, you are far from the only one. You will eventually discover that under the movie stereotypes, imposed mystique, and overall inflated expectations, each and every one of us is at least a touch more boring than our images would indicate. And that is not a bad thing. Frederick Frankfurt Fletcher. An Unexpected Enrollment. 1. It was shaping up to be quite the busy Tuesday. My night started with a literal bang, the sound of my wife Crystal yanking down a suitcase from a high shelf in our closet. Her job kept her traveling frequently, though thankfully the pace had finally begun to slow down compared to the months following our wedding. That was something of a punitive situation, however, one which appeared to have run its course. As Crystal packed for her latest outing, we puttered about and chatted. Despite the looming events on my docket, I'd learned over and over how quickly the peaceful moments could be shattered and made a point of appreciating them while they lasted. Finding time for the woman I loved was far more important than getting ahead on work, a lesson the living version of Fred might never have learned. That might seem a strange idea to express if you are unfamiliar with my situation, so please permit a momentary digression just in case. My name is Frederick Frankfurt Fletcher, and several years ago I was changed into a vampire. Crystal is a parahuman as well, the catch-all term for beings of a supernatural nature. Her job is with a place simply known as the Agency, the purpose of which is to keep all the various parahuman factions and entities playing by the rules of their various treaties. Eventually, duty forced Crystal off to the airstrip, where a secure plane would be waiting, and I was able to properly start my evening. As had become our tradition since moving into this new abode, I called out to Charlotte, the entity which now functionally was the apartment building around us, just as she'd previously been a manor house used as a bed and breakfast. Although her original body was destroyed in an attack by my sire, a real piece of work named Quinn, we'd managed to save her essence. With funding from a dragon she'd worked for and the expert enchanting of some former clients who'd become friends, Charlotte was integrated into this new building, one that allowed her to house far more than my motley assortment of friends. Those friends were the very subject of discussion once Charlotte manifested in her elderly woman form. She used many shapes and had been experimenting with new ones since the move, but she still seemed to favor this one for those moments she deemed gossip time. Lillian and Al have headed out to meet Asha at the Vadelthorne estate, she reported dutifully. They used a car from the garage, so I can vouch for its safety. Neil and Albert are still off with Arch on their latest mission. No word back yet, but that's business as usual with that bunch. Bubba and Amy are at Richard's for some sort of job, and Gregor is currently standing downstairs, waiting for your next meeting. It had taken multiple attacks on myself and my friends, to the point of very nearly losing one of them, and discovering a conspiracy to wipe out my clan before we'd even known there was a threat, but I'd finally started taking security more seriously. Checking in to make sure everyone was safe and accounted for each night was only part of it. The apartment's newly renovated underground garage was under Charlotte's control, which meant sneaking another bomb onto our vehicles required getting past her nigh-omnipresent gaze. Same thing for sneak attacks, or any attacks in general, should they occur within her boundaries. Charlotte's original body had been built with defense in mind as well, but no matter how talented the mages who made her might have been, they didn't have the backing of a dragon. One who was going out of his way to make a good impression on Charlotte, at that, hoping to eventually poach her services for himself. Between Gideon's spending and the incredible skill of the Clover twins, the Charlotte Arms Apartments was arguably one of the most secure buildings in the entire state, if not region. It would take a lot more than potions and possessed murder bugs to hurt her again, a protection that extended to those in her care. Even Gregor relaxed a bit while we were under Charlotte's watch, and it truly takes something to get a gargoyle acting less stiff. Whenever I emerged from under her roof, however, he'd fall into step shortly after, shadowing in case I got an urge to go darting off alone. Not that I ever tried to do anything that foolhardy, of course. It was simply that we had the unfortunate habit of getting separated during our adventures. Such incidents only made Gregor more determined to stick close, and after the Terva clan tried to destroy the House of Fred entirely, I couldn't even protest in good conscience. Although we might have won that exchange, it didn't take away the truths revealed. We were a potential target from threats we might never even imagine, let alone consider. Hence the new practices and mind toward security. We might not be able to control the world at large, parahuman or mundane, but we could still work to keep each other safe. Thank you, Charlotte. Is the usual meeting room available? During the remodel, Charlotte's ground floor had been reworked. Offices for human staff that would no longer be needed were turned into general-use conference rooms, not unlike the shared office fad that had been so hot in years prior. Despite her claim that it was to make the overall facility as functional as possible, part of me still suspected Charlotte had been thinking of us when requesting that tweak. Fletcher Accounting Services made ample use of the space, since meeting clients on Charlotte's turf offered an incomparable level of security. Cleaned and ready, though your first appointment has been replaced. That caught my attention. Clients cancelled or rescheduled, but replacement was an oddity, even given the usual eccentricities of parahuman clients. The gentleman who ran the snow cone stand? Mr. Giriot sends his apologies, said the matter was out of his hands, Charlotte reported. Working with Gideon had gotten her used to being more involved, a habit that had carried itself over when we moved into the apartments. Getting her to agree to take a salary had been a headache and a half, but she was simply doing too much work to qualify as merely pitching in. That might seem like a silly thing if you're wondering what a magically animated building needs money for, but no amount of magic will dissuade the collection of taxes on her business and property. Crystal assured me that many have already tried. Skimming over the scheduling app on my phone, I noted that Mr. Giriot had booked 2 hours of my time and had insisted on paying the consulting fee in advance. It was overkill for what I would have needed during an initial assessment, perhaps because it had never been a real meeting in the first place. As I recalled, Mr. Giriot was fey-touched. Keeping track of a client's parahuman nature in the event that they shared it was an important part of the job. Different parahuman cultures had different ideas of what was polite. For example, when dealing with therianthropes, the general category for creatures such as werewolves, any attempt at small talk before starting the point of the meeting was seen as suspicious, whereas a mage would often want to rant at me for minutes at a time about whatever concept or problem they were currently tackling, viewing attempts to steer toward business as dismissive and rude. Fey-touched weren't too far off from general humans. To my understanding, they were descendants of half-fey, like Crystal's best friend and co-worker, June Windbrook. While she was blessed with enough power to be an agent, it seemed the magic diluted as it went through the bloodline. Fey-touched, like Mr. Giriot, had a natural touch of grace and charisma. Some even held on to a knack for magic, although only at slightly above mortal levels. Did he send any word on who exactly would be replacing him? What remained undiluted about Fey Touched, however, were the obligations that came with their heritage. Even from a literal world away, the greater Fey powers kept those that served them in line. I doubted they were above using Fey Touched, given that I'd seen June herself wielded as a pawn, one that Hellebore had seemed all too willing to sacrifice. "Nothing so far," Charlotte confirmed. "Do you want to cancel?" "Very much so. I have a hunch this is going to be a lot more than just a budget meeting." With a resigned sigh, a habit left over from my living oxygen-needing days, I began packing my laptop into its bag, which went into the briefcase that was otherwise ready to go. "Please ask Gregor to stand outside the door in case of any issues, but keep the meeting private unless it becomes dangerous." One of the many perks of living at the Charlotte Arms was the way in which her walls could halt as much or as little sound as she wanted them to, offering excellent space for confidential meetings or serene lodging. While she could technically hear everything within her walls, Charlotte was practiced in giving people their privacy, and her employment contract included confidentiality and non-disclosure clauses in case clients needed reassurance. Curiosity nipped at my heels as I pulled my freshly warmed blood from my sous vide machine, drinking some and pouring the rest into my enchanted flask, which kept it at an optimal temperature. Strange as the replacement meeting was, it only represented a small part of my busy night. Since our scuffle with the Turva clan, more and more interest had started to come in for our services. I wasn't entirely sure if we'd impressed the parahuman community or if we'd just proven that we wouldn't be immediately wiped out, but either way, something had shifted. Thank goodness Lillian had proven such an excellent hire and Al a quick study. Without those two, I could never have handled the surge in demand. Even with their help, meetings filled up fast. I needed to expand again, but finding Al had been hard enough. There wasn't time to do another hunt for the rare parahuman with a true interest in accounting. Instead, I was making ample use of a vampire's minimal need for sleep. By the time I was descending in the elevator, interest in my mystery meeting had been replaced by checklists of all the tasks I needed to handle before sunrise. I was so absorbed in my planning that I nearly jumped when the elevator doors parted to reveal a waiting Charlotte. This time she was using the form that used to be a waiter and now seemed to work as a bellhop, doorman, or whatever other task demanded more muscle than the old woman would be expected to possess. "Your guest has arrived." Charlotte graciously made no mention of my visible startling, simply stepping aside to let me depart the elevator. I took my exit, then automatically started walking toward my usual conference room.
Should I be concerned?
Her nod was almost too quick, like it had started mid-question.
Absolutely. I don't anticipate any physical altercation. However, I cannot envision a scenario in which this bodes well for whatever is to come.
We turned down a familiar hall. I spotted Gregor standing off to the side and offered him a silent nod of greeting. He returned the gesture, albeit more slowly, eyes all but burning a hole through the waiting door. Evidently, he'd seen the replacement client arrive and was not a fan. Tempted as I was to ask what I'd be stepping into, I merely grasped the doorknob and pulled. I trusted Charlotte and Gregor to have my back if things went awry. Plus, coping with surprises was part of the parahuman package. There was also only so many opportunities to practice such skills safely, and I wasn't about to let one slip past. I'd thought myself mentally prepared for anything. However, the figure waiting for me pulled my eyes a touch wider all the same. Sitting in a chair across the room was a man who all but radiated confidence. Understandably so. Handsome barely covered it, his tailored suit putting honed muscles on clear display. Even his smallest movements came with a sense of grace and surety. A fae touched might be mistaken for a mortal even among parahumans, but half-fae skew far closer to their magical ancestors, and this was one I knew on sight. Waiting for me in the conference room was September Windbrook, agent, brother of June, and ex-fiancé to Crystal. 2.
Mr. Windbrook, to what do I owe the pleasure?
Surprise or not, this was still a meeting between Fletcher Accounting Services and someone who'd booked our time. I had a degree of professionalism to uphold as I entered the room and took my seat.
Just September will be fine.
He leaned back in his chair, casually eyeing me up and down. Without having any clue what he was looking for or if he found it, I opted to ignore the probing gaze entirely.
Very well, as you prefer. September Windbrook, what can I do for you?
His eyes finally steadied as he leaned forward, producing a metal disc from his pocket. Even if I hadn't recognized it on sight, I could sort of feel the object, despite our distance. Not quite a sensation akin to touch, more a knowledge that settled upon me the minute it was in my sight.
A bargain was made between yourself and Hellebore, Seer of Winter, a deal in which I was chosen to act as arbiter, assessing the morality and legality of the favor requested. Hellebore has elected to call for what is owed, and felt it would be most expedient if the entreaty came from me directly.
In that case, I believe I owe you an apology. It wasn't my intent to get you further embroiled in our affairs, nor to have Hellebore sending you on these tasks. Come to think of it, the last time Hellebore had reached out, she'd used September as the messenger as well. Was she needling me and Crystal, or did she just enjoy handing him errands?
That earned me a quizzical look and a slightly tilted head from September before he responded.
It is an honor to be called to service by the royal court, regardless of the task demanded. I thought you'd be more concerned with what the favor being requested actually is.
I'll admit, I am curious about what a being like Hellebore could possibly need from someone such as myself. Self-effacing seemed a prudent tactic to take when discussing the fey royalty of Winter. In truth, I did know of one particular talent I possessed that Hellebore couldn't replicate, acting as bait for my crazed sire, Quinn. He consistently showed up when I was vulnerable, targeting my friends as well.
and Hellebore had made no secret of the fact that she was hunting him down. September reached into his suit jacket and produced a brochure, laying it down on the conference table before us. I plucked it up and looked the page over. It appeared to be advertising a community college named Tresselvend University. Quaint campus, stock images of smiling faces, and a few photos of books and protractors that felt a touch random. By the time I looked up, September had set a small knife on the table. Since he'd been carrying it, that meant the metal almost certainly wasn't iron. Unlike most parahumans native to our world, who were weakened by silver, Fae couldn't abide the touch of iron. As a half-Fae, September wouldn't be as impacted, but his carrying iron around would still be extremely unlikely, especially since it wouldn't be effective on any non-Fae he encountered. It also lacked the telltale scent of silver, which my brain picked up easily. Even though silver no longer injured me the way it did other parahumans, my instinctual brain still reacted to it as if it were a deadly threat. Considering how often silver was used as a tool by someone with murder on the mind, it wasn't a habit I was in any hurry to break either.
When you are ready, prick your finger and press a small amount of blood to the school's crest on the front.
It was a curious request, true, but working with the supernatural community quickly inured one to such oddities.
This isn't some sort of contract or anything, I trust. Just a precaution that needs to be removed, September assured me.
Not exactly the denial I might have liked, but it would do. Taking the knife, I jammed it deep into my thumb. Vampires don't generally bleed in the same way as living creatures. Our blood is thicker and harder to get out. Our bodies naturally cling to it, knowing it's what sustains us. After over half a minute of effort, I managed to smear a dark red blob onto the front of the brochure. As soon as my blood touched the surface, a change warped over the paper. While it still proudly advertised Tresselvend University, the photographs had been stripped of all their stock smiles and faces. In their place were creatures with horns playing volleyball, a pale figure studying in a library, a tentacled teacher writing on the blackboard. The words had altered as well. Instead of generic phrases about a long history of educational greatness, the brochure discussed the widely regarded mage program, its classes on blending in with human society, and the many social activities planned throughout the semester. The last bit struck me as unexpectedly normal, but it was still a college, after all.
This is incredible. I wasn't able to keep the wonder out of my voice, mesmerized as I was by the notion of a parahuman college. There were very few places where we could exist without hiding our true natures, towns such as Borbag, and events like Calcucon being rare exceptions to our norm. The concept of a college dedicated to parahumans, where they could learn without the added burden of constant masquerading, struck me as an excellent one. September, however, evidently misunderstood my meaning.
An admittedly complex enchantment, though they use a mass production version. It attunes the page to the magic of the parahuman whose blood is placed on it. You could be reading that on the subway, and every other human will still see the original version, as would Therians, Fae, and anyone else who isn't a vampire.
Rather than correct him, I elected to steer the conversation forward, setting the brochure back on the table once more.
Very interesting. The college itself seems a marvel. I'd never heard of such a place existing. I don't suppose Hellebore wants me to go look over their books and make sure they're staying solvent.
Evaluating the finances of an entire college would be a massive undertaking, even for a small community school. Still, compared to the sorts of favors I'd imagined Hellebore requesting in my most fearful moments, I would take the task with a smile and whistle as I worked.
Of course, nothing was ever that easy. Trestlevend is well-funded by many entities who have an interest in its continued operation. What concerns Hellebore is the student who will be attending this next semester's courses. Pierris is a child of Winter's Royals, one who has shown great promise in his rearing. As part of his education, Pierris will be attending Trestlevend for a brief time. It is akin to what you might call a semester abroad, an opportunity to widen one's understanding of the greater world by experiencing other cultures. I really hope this isn't a request to help guard or protect him. That statement was even truer than I hoped to be letting on, because so far as I could see, there would be nothing immoral about asking me to help keep an innocent safe, even though I was spectacularly ill-suited to the task. That earned a small snort of laughter from September. No, arrangements on that front have already been made. However, as Pierris is a royal of Winter, it is expected that he will be learning from the best. Trestlevend's staff is a somewhat eclectic collection. Some are highly regarded. Others are seen as all that was available. Private tutors have been prepared for any subject where instruction is feared to be lacking. However, the teacher who usually covers accounting and specifics of human business has been unexpectedly called away and is unlikely to return until the following semester. I resisted the urge to drop my head into my hands and groan, but the temptation was undeniable. It was plain where our conversation was now heading, not that September had been trying to play things aloof. September, please tell me that this teacher had an unexpected windfall or the like, and not that Fey-related forces left him sick, injured, or similarly incapacitated.
Are you making an accusation, Mr. Fletcher?
His tone grew a bit sharper, though still stayed just on the right side of casual. I'm acknowledging the fact that Hellebore is highly adept at getting what she wants, and since it's growing increasingly clear she wants me at that college, I don't feel wrong in asking. Hurting someone just so I can take their place does not fall within what I would consider to be acceptable morality, and I hope you'd feel the same. With hints of a smirk at the edges of his mouth, September nodded.
My understanding is that her services were requested elsewhere, by a client willing to pay her a high premium for the inconvenience, as well as offer the school compensation to hold her position. By the end of this semester, Professor Othman should have a substantial infusion to her retirement account after just a few short months of easy work.
That put my immediate concern to rest, which unfortunately only cleared the way for new worries to crop up. First and foremost was the obvious risk in what Hellebore was requesting. Going to Trestlevend meant leaving my town of Winslow, a place where I had an awful lot of friends watching my back. Merely residing somewhere other than Charlotte Arms put me at substantial risk, and the longer I was out there, the more likely it was that Quinn would get word. Then again, a large part of me suspected that that was exactly the point of all this. If the college was anything like Borback, then it would have a tremendous amount of security. Keeping mortals out and parahumans under control was no easy task. It would be the sort of place where Quinn would have to work to get access, all while Hellebore could lay ample traps of her own. Still, I didn't attempt to reject the notion out of hand. Whatever Hellebore asked of me was likely going to be in this vein. My abilities as bait were the only real value I had to someone of her means. The situation was otherwise reasonable, if not favorable. Not to mention, I was genuinely interested in seeing an openly parahuman university. I should probably mention that I have very little experience speaking publicly and none in teaching, not to mention syllabus construction, coursework, or anything like that.
Hellebore has heard you speak when motivated. She believes you capable of the task, September replied. Professor Offman's curriculum and materials are available for your use. What Hellebore wishes
is your expertise in human businesses, not your overall capacities as an educator.
He'd had those answers ready. Hellebore had evidently anticipated.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?